Mr. Apocalypse is coming. He's rising into view just like the sun. He's bringing living truth and bringing freedom. And a wake-up call designed for everyone. The very thing you've been longing for. Or it might be the very last thing on your mind. It could be something that you sent on ahead of you. Or it could be something you left behind.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Les Visible.
Welcome. Welcome to Dog Poet Transmitting and the Saucer Pod, wired for sound and transmitting on the galactic etheric currents in search of conscious life. Here on this planet, there are small pockets of this sort of thing, but the larger congregations of life forms here, when viewed from afar, say, from the saucer pod during those times when we are 8 miles high, or even higher, and when viewed through the infrared scope, one sees great patches of pulsing red. I think this must be where the cities are. My computer tells me these are concentrations of appetite and hunger for all kinds of things. My computer also tells me not to go to any of these places because the force of the appetite and the hunger has created an atmosphere of desperation bordering on panic, and it's not all that safe or pleasant for those of us who are not prone to instant captivation by sights, sounds, and smells. Once again, my apologies for the poor quality of this recording, and I'm afraid it will continue until I am set up in my new location. Should God willing that happen. Anyway, my computer isn't actually just a computer, though. It has vast analytical skills and the capacity to catalog and organize far better than any human mind. It is possessed of an awareness of self, though the self it is aware of is not its own self. It is a projection of that self, and in that sense you can think of it as something like an angel. When I say something like, I mean to imply that most people don't know what angels are. They have a fantasy construct that has been created for them by literature, painters, electronic media, and so forth. In a way, the self that projects this being that helps me in my life is a computer, but it's so very, very, very much more than that. It knows everything, and it is everything and everyone after a certain fashion of understanding. Keeping these things in mind, that the Creator is in everything, surrounds and contains everything, and is also apart from everyone and everything, while still being everyone and everything, does it not stand to reason that any intelligent life form would make it their single greatest priority to come into closer contact with this force and to harmonize themselves with this force in order to maximize the potential for interplay between themselves and this force? The one who helps me and who is somewhat like an angel tells me that one of the greatest dangers that comes from entering into those red pulsing concentrations of life is that one is almost certain to forget about the really important features of existence. In these places, there is not much that is sacred. People do not express gratitude for their food. They just shovel it into their mouths. They interact with each other as if they were also food that they are not grateful for. My invisible friend tells me, my friends, tell me that our primary focus should be on our mind and what we allow to dance there. Without mind control, we are perpetual victims of the forces of collective thought. And in these times, collective thought is not healthy. Why do I say this? Look around you. Look at the general state of the world. Does it appear healthy to you? We have become programmed and patterned by those we allow to influence us. There are so many of us now, pressed up against each other, all of us scrambling for some place to exist in. There's a poem by Delmore Schwartz, and it goes like this. The heavy bear who goes with me, a manifold hunger to smear his face. Clumsy and lumbering here and there, the central ton of every place. The hungry, beating, brutish one, in love with candy, anger, and sleep. Crazy factotum, disheveling all, climbs the building, kicks the football, boxes his brother in the hate-ridden city. Breathing at my side, that heavy animal, that heavy bear who sleeps with me, howls in his sleep for a world of sugar, a sweetness intimate as the water's clasp. Howls in his sleep because the tightrope trembles and shows the darkness beneath. The strutting show-off is terrified, dressed in his dress suit, bulging his pants, trembles to think that his quivering meat must finally wince to nothing at all. That inescapable animal walks with me, has followed me since the black womb held, moves where I move, distorting my gesture. A caricature, a swollen shadow, a stupid clown of the spirit's motive, perplexes and affronts with his own darkness the secret life of belly and bone. Opaque, too near, my private, yet unknown, stretches to embrace the very dear, with whom I would walk without him near, touches her grossly, although a word would bare my heart and make me clear, stumbles, flounders, and strives to be fed, dragging me with him in his mouthing care, amid the 100 million of his kind, the scrimmage of appetite everywhere. That poem came to mind as I was sorting my thoughts through this broadcast. It fits. What he's saying there is what I'm talking about. What we're up against is the relentless pressure of the day-to-day. It's like watching a movie. You might be aware that you're watching something at the beginning, but then you become involved in what you're watching and you forget that you're watching because you become a part of the action taking place. Although your position is passive, your mind is engaged as if it were a participant. Life is constructed to involve us, or maybe it just happens. I don't know how important that is. I know it's important to find a way to deal with it. If all you're doing is acting out in a movie with no idea of the plot or how the movie ends, are you not at an extreme disadvantage? What are the odds that random fate will favor you? Have you noticed random fate favoring people generally? It usually doesn't work that way, does it? I am in news shops and places like that on a regular basis from week to week, and over time I've observed the large numbers of people buying lottery tickets. I've seen people buy them in multiples or wager on a half a dozen or a dozen combinations, which brings the cost of the ticket up around and over 20 euro. When I was in France in a shopping center, I happened to be waiting outside such a store, and it had major lottery concession going on inside. And outside were three machines like a gigantic slot machines that, you know, were just standing there, and people were coming and going in continuous numbers to buy anyone inside or outside of several of these colorful allurements of promise. And how many of them win much of anything at all? Very, very few of them do. But they're all captured up in the hope that it might be them. It's got to be somebody, right? So they wind up spending literally thousands and tens of thousands of dollars for the occasional $5 here and there. Most people live their lives wishing and hoping. Some portions spend their time doing, for the joy of doing, or under the fever spell of acquisitiveness. People do things for all kinds of reasons, all kinds of reasons. I don't know how many ways I can say this, or how many times I will have to say this. It has to mean something to you. Whatever it is, it has to mean something. If whatever it is doesn't matter to you, it won't matter, period. And if it was something given to you that you have chosen not to use, it'll get taken away. If anything matters to you more than anything else, your shot at accomplishing it is greater than in any other state of being. This would be the right place to say, be careful what you wish for. In the thousands of years that one or another or more of us have been running around down here, We haven't discovered anything new about the mind. Rather, we have forgotten a great deal of what we used to know. It's worse than that, though, because the quality of the information we process and the tasks and entertainments we set before our mind are as banal, mediocre, and meaningless as if they had, well, as at any time in recorded history. I believe one of the reasons that LSD came along was to make it possible to break through the suffocating blanket of materialism. I'm not saying it's a good idea to take LSD all your life, like I have so far, or take it over 1,000 times, like I have. Some people have the dispensation, and it would appear that I do. Mr. Visible says this with a self-deprecating grin. You will note that you have met certain people who get away with particular things. They don't get away with everything, just that particular thing they always seem to be able to skate on. You know other people who have different dispensations. I don't know why this phenomenon exists. Karma, probably, but I do know that it exists. One of the things I love to point out are the laws of nature. There are certain forces, factors, what have you, that are consistent enough to be called laws. It is through understanding these laws that we are able to bypass them. Like putting a metal object in the sky and flying it wherever in defiance of the laws of gravity, which is not the same as the law of gravitas, which I try never to offend against. Right, Visible. Anyway, my point in bringing this up is that we only know some of nature's laws. Some, not all. Seriously, there are quite a few that we are unaware of, and you can't take advantage of something you're unaware of. Certain yogis are aware of these laws, as are men and women of wisdom in any land. Some of the things known by some people would astonish the world, but we don't hear about them. Why that is could be any of a number of reasons I don't need to go into. I bring this up because there are ways for you to come into possession of this kind of information. This information and much, much more is held by Lady Nature. High-ranking members of the Devic realm, the Ineffable, and some few members of the human race. A wise man once said that if you're looking for something, the thing you're looking for will draw you to it, even if it's in a cave in Peru high in the Andes. There's a certain magnetism at work. Of course, there's a little more to it, but I don't have the space to get into that right now. I can tell you that it's possible for you or me or anyone to seek out whoever possesses certain information, and dependent on meeting certain conditions, acquire this information. History is replete with many instances of someone coming into deeper communication with eternal entities with an immortal consciousness. Luther Burbank comes to mind, but there are many, many more. You can do this too. How many times have I said, go into nature and address Lady Nature and build a relationship? Sure, nothing is going to happen the first day, or the first week, or the first month. And you may be sure she will know your every motivation, since she knows you better than you know yourself. She's a part of you as well. We go through so much trouble to build earthly relationships. They will end when you or they depart. Of course, some of them continue onward, but a relationship with any representative of the eternal can well be eternal and serve you well in this life and the next and any interims that may occur between. Here's an example of such a thing. The Amitabha Buddha, it's impossible to communicate an awareness of the span of his austerities, he created a heaven all by himself. Well, of course he had help, but he earned it. This heaven is called the Western Pure Land, and there is a very special benefit. If you have the name of the Amitabha Buddha on your lips when you pass, you're able to take all the rest of your incarnations there. I'd say that's worth chanting his name nonstop till you pass, but that's just me. This is just one of the inexplicable wonders that one may come across if one looks in the right directions. The resident treasures and beauties that reside in the subconscious cannot be described. Not adequately. They are beyond words. Of course, there are terrors there, too, and they can also be indescribable, but we are not after terrors, are we? The thing is, with the terrors, they come after you for one reason or another, but one does not have to experience this. If people had any idea of the landscapes and locations that reside within them, they would be far more motivated than they are. Dreaming is another thing. People have no idea the degree to which their dreaming ability is under their control, potentially. Ernest Holmes discusses this in his main book, The Science of Mind. This is the problem with getting into the rut of materialism, with becoming a slave to appetite, with being an inflexible resident of the first three fours of consciousness, with obsessions and compulsions, unless that obsession and compulsion is about the ineffable. I have only tasted at the margins of what I'm speaking of, but I can tell you there is nothing out there that can compare with what is in there. I'm so very grateful that I have reached a stage of my life where such things are my absolutely main interest and focus. Everything on the shelves of life's big department store leaves me cold. Their influence has faded and are fading, and soon they will be gone completely. And what does that mean? What is the end result of such direction? Freedom is the result. And about one thing I can be confident. I will see those so inclined on the other side, given that we are drawn to the same locales, and I suspect that is a strong possibility, given the present resonance. All right then, my friends. We've come to the end of yet another broadcast. And I will see you next week, if there is one. Not only are the days getting shorter, I could swear the weeks are too. Feels like I just did this. I hope tonight's broadcast leads to sweet and revealing dreams for all of you this evening. And I pray each of you will find your road. That said, greetings, Lord Ganesha. Much love, Lady Nature. Om Amitabha. Hare Krishna. Hail, Lord Jesus Christ. Alapar. Carry on, Baha Ula. Aloha and...
He's strong and tall and slender, and he's got a walking stick. You'll be changed forever if you get hit by it. He's coming for the Zionists and all their bankers too. And if you don't behave yourself, he's coming after you. There's no way to stop him. He can't be bribed or bought. And he's sweeter than the air in spring, and meaner than you thought. You're the deer inside his headlights, if you're the kind that hunts by night. And no one stays anonymous when he gets you in his sights. Mr. Apocalypse is coming, oh yeah. He's rising into view just like the sun. He's bringing living truth, he's bringing freedom. And a wake-up call designed for everyone.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIC Radio Network of Stations.